Geekaholics, it's the Bad Tackle Podcast.
Welcome to Synthaholics. Thank you so much for downloading our show. Today we got another great episode. We are talking the next episode of Star Trek Picard, Episode 2, Maps and Legend. Today we've got myself, Aaron O'Brien. We have David Duncan.
The Compass.
The Compass. And we have our returning guest, Guy Davis from Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. Welcome again,
Hello.
Guy.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We have been graced by another episode of Picard, and things have been developing. So,
real quickly, consider it graced. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound saved a wretch like it.
Grace, how
don't
sweet.
Don't we sing that when we bury something, though?
What's that?
Don't we sing that song when we bury things?
You sing when you bury things.
Yeah. Well, anyways, just real quick before we get into the whole thing, everyone, if you like the show, please you can subscribe to us either through your podcast app. You can also join us on Facebook. You can go to our Facebook group, Facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics, and join us there. There's plenty of chatter about the new Picard show, some good, some bad. And you can also tweet at us. Yeah, lots of chatter. You can also tweet at us at Synthaholic Duo. And if the show seems like you want to support and help the show go a little further, you can throw a couple bucks our way by going to our Patreon for Synthaholics. That would be greatly appreciated. So, Maps and Legends. Should we get into the full show, or do we want to kind of like talk about our feelings?
I think we do non-spoilers at first.
Okay. Not spoilers.
Just a couple minutes, and then we'll get into the meat. Maps and compasses.
The meaty spoilers.
Yeah.
The milfy spoilers.
So I had an interesting, as a side note, I had a very interesting story that I happened today. I was on my way back from work, and as I was driving along, I got to this intersection, which has like these, it's a weird five-way intersection. So you end up with this left turn lane and then a different left turn lane. It doesn't matter. I had my window down because it's 70 degrees here today, which won't be tomorrow. It's going to be snowing tomorrow because Colorado. And this guy pulls up next to me and he just out of the blue goes, "So have you seen Star Trek Picard?" And I'm like, "Yes." And he goes, "What do you think of it?" And I was like, so we had this discussion and I'm like, this is such a random thing. Some random dude in a convertible next to me is asking me about Picard and whether he should watch it. And of course, I'm saying, yeah, go ahead, watch it. It's great. You know, it's a lot of fun. You'll like it. And then I drive off and I came home and I was like, that's so weird. What? And then my wife said, it's because you've got a Trek fish on your car. You've got a Star Trek fish in your car. So, and you've got NASA logos all over your car. You're obviously a Trekkie. I didn't even, that was such a random out of the blue, you know, I'm just sitting here having this conversation in the middle of some intersection in Colorado and, you know, with this guy who wanted to know and stuff like that. And I thought, it's just such a weird thing.
People, but I was okay with it. You.
Yeah, no, we were waiting. It was a weird light. That's why I kind of have to explain it.
You know, I had when I was my first, fast food job, I always get thrown off when people would call me by my first name, and then realize I had a name tag on.
Oh, yeah. Like, how do they know I'm Aaron?
Well,
like,
how did that happen? You know, it was weird for me when I was like in different stores with my name tag on. I'd be wearing a Circuit City shirt, writing down prices of items at Best Buy to bring back to my managers, and people would ask me at Best Buy if I worked there.
Nice.
I had a Circuit City logo on.
Circuit City, that's a store from a bygone era.
A bygone era, yes. I worked for the Dinosaurs of Shores. Stores.
So, who wants to go first? Non-spoiler.
I'll go first. This is CSI Picard, brought to you by the TV show network that puts out 16 different CSI shows. That's my non-spoiler review of this week's Picard. Go ahead.
Nice. Anybody what else? You got?
Well, you know, my feeling on this one is I love the way that it laid down more of the mysteries going on here. It added interesting depth to certain aspects of this, of the show. And I really like that. I mean, it was putting down more, it's obvious we've got a very complicated plot going on here. And the more they paint this painting, the more I'm starting to see the picture. And I love that. It's like every episode, it's getting a little bit clearer. I still am not sure where they're headed, but I like that they're, you know, every time I'm like, well, you know, the first episode, I was like, well, there's 20 possibilities of where they're headed with this one. This episode, I'm down to like 18 possibilities. You know what I mean? It's like, that's really cool. I like the way that they're doing that.
I feel that Narek is my new Ash Tyler. I fucking hate him. Gets under my skin.
He drives me bananas. I just, every time I see his face, it's just like, he looks almost too much like the other Spock. And since there's already, like, from Discovery, he sort of looks like Ethan Peck a little bit with his beard. And I'm just like, we've already had this. And it feels wrong because this is so far in the future. Get it off my screen.
Yeah, get it off my screen. You just think all Vulcans and Romulans look the way, like.
I don't know. I'm assuming, man.
Yeah, you're Vulcan racist. That's not good.
Vulcan racist. No, but his face bothers me. I agree. There is a
slightly, and I don't know if you guys noticed that, some of the Romulans have like the full, like the head lobes, and some do not.
I love this.
So have you been watching the extras on this?
No.
No, because I've been watching. Will Wheaton and the Ready Room.
Your arch nemesis, Will Wheaton.
My arch nemesis,
you
Will Wheaton.
You gave him a second of screen time and gazed upon his almost same as your old body as you.
Visage. It's so bizarre. Anyway, it was like watching a mirror image of me. A
clone of yourself.
A clone of myself.
Oh, no, you and Will Wheaton have the little circles that are interconnected. Aw, it's so cute.
It's so cute. Yes, we're the twins. No, I was watching Will Wheaton and on the Ready Room, and that's actually intentional.
Oh, really? Because,
you know, originally it was, you know, we have to bring back the Romulans. Well, you know, there was dissension as to whether it should be TNG Romulans or whether it should be TOS Romulans.
Right.
And what they decided on was they're just varying degrees. They're just, it's like
both.
Right. Right. Some Romulans have that ridge and some don't. And that gives it that. Actually, I thought that was really clever, because what that means is both the TNG Romulans and the TOS Romulans are now canon.
I like that. It always drove me crazy. They just like went out of their way.
Me and Dave have discussions about the frontal lobes and how they could have developed and stuff like that. So
they got really mad for a really long time.
So, permafrowns. You know, it's just what they're doing is they're making it so that the intention here is kind of like, you know, some humans have bigger jaws and some humans have, you know, Ecopanthral eyelids, you know, the eyelids like Asians have.
Okay.
And
some have large penises,
some do not.
Some don't. That's just the way it goes. And you know, we don't talk about that. You know, we just don't talk about that. You know,
that's the only thing we talk about, guy.
But what we have here is that they were saying that's sort of a thing going on with the Romulans.
That's interesting.
So, That's intentional.
They did this smart. Why didn't they do that smart with Discovery? We could have had TOS Klingons. We could have had TNG Klingons. We could have had Discovery Klingons. And we just got Discovery Klingons.
Have you been reading Aftermath, Discovery Aftermath?
No.
Okay, so the comics, Discovery Aftermath, they've got Core in it.
Yeah, okay.
Is he TOS Core or is he DS9 Core?
He's TOS Core. Oh. He doesn't have ridges.
Nice.
And they didn't say anything. They just stuck him in there. And Laurel's talking to Kor, and Kor is talking to Laurel, and it's just like they just accept it that some of the Klingons don't have ridges.
Fine. It should have been in the show. They really should have had all the flavors of Klingon in the show.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with this. That totally makes sense to me, you know?
I mean,
hopefully in season 3 they'll do it right.
Yeah, we can. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. Season 1 and 2 of TNG sucked. I mean, really.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, with a handful of exceptions. And the truth is, I still have a hard time watching season one and two of DS9.
Yeah, they're rough.
With the exception of Duet, which is beautiful, of course.
Yeah.
And then, season one and two of Voyager,
Well, until 7 of 9 comes, Voyager's super painful.
Yeah, I mean, actually, so really, you've got until season 4 of Voyager.
But the thing is, Voyager is the only consistently inconsistent show. Voyager has some great episodes in every season, but it's also got some of the worst Star Trek of all in all the seasons, too. Voyager's a roller coaster ride through it.
We don't even talk about Threshold. I mean, really. Let's be realistic here.
It's the only thing we talk about because of how bad it is.
We talk about Threshold all the time, unfortunately.
We don't talk about Threshold. I have nightmares about Threshold.
But do we talk about Magics of Mesus or whatever that was for the
Magics of Magus 2 or Spock Magus 2. A hologram on the ground
from the animated and series, black which, magic because, oh my god.
Because Spock is a Wiccan.
Right?
Hashtag Wiccan. Not my Wiccan Spock.
Not my Wiccan Spock.
My Wiccan Spock.
Actually, Narek. I think Narek is Wiccan Spock, now that I think there about you it. Go.
That's what Narek is Wiccan Spock.
Well, let's get started with this Maps and Legends. This is
Maps and Legends.
Season 1, episode 2. This is aired January 30th, 2020, and we start
the
off...
The Roaring Twenties.
Are we going into the spoiler side?
Yes.
Should we warn people?
Full spoilers. Spoilers. We will ruin this for you.
Guy, we went to the same place, flashing and full frontal.
I know. Isn't that just...
We had the same brain, guy.
The full mount.
Friends, man.
He knows what shows he's on.
So we start off the episode with the Utopia Planitia shipyards, and we get the synths, not synthaholics, but the synths revolting on first contact day. We kind of get this idea right away that they're like put into a room, which doesn't make any sense. Why do they need to power down? Maybe there's some regeneration time, but you think they could work longer hours. But the guy wakes them up from the morning and calls them plastic people. And we meet one of the synths named F8. And there's a little talk between each other, but obviously they don't understand each other quite well. And people say, like, F8 creeps her out. And they even said, like, he can hear you from here, even though he's not in the room.
You know what's brown and sticky? Shit.
Yeah.
And they didn't go there. And I'm like, why? Why did you say brown and sticky and you didn't go shit? I was thinking poop. Come on, guys.
Yeah. It was a bad joke.
It was a very bad joke.
And then later we see that during one of the time while they're working, they're taking their lunch break, and this F8 comes in and he starts hijacking the computer.
Well, we see his eye. It looks like it's downloading some data, and then he goes nuts.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah. And he hijacks the computer. Looks like he might drop some defenses or something to that nature, so they can actually the synths can attack the shipyards. And there's some altercations within the crew against F8, but F8, starts blowing them away with looks like some kind of welding gun or something similar to that. So
he blows
whatever
them up.
It is. It's pretty brutal. Yeah.
Blows them up, and then he blows his own positronic brain, presumably so no one can find out exactly what happened.
Exactly.
He was probably ground zero. And I've got a funny antidote about F8. F8 is the key you use to get into Windows safe mode.
Yes. It's probably a joke, I'll tell you the truth.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Or it's Fate, one of the two.
And I also thought Fate, I thought it was funny that last episode we talked about Geordi doing the opposite of Roots and being the slave owner Bates of Roots. Synths. So, Dave,
good thing he left that day.
Dave, you were right.
Yeah, I know. I'm totally right.
I cringed at that joke, but you were absolutely right that Geordi LaForge, LeVar Burton,
the web.
Was literally had slave labor of these synths.
Yep.
And treated them like garbage.
There are a couple of things going on. One, and I just want to interject here.
And he made the humans work already, at first contact day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there are a couple of things. One, We know that LaForge is still alive.
Yes,
yeah, in the comic, it shows
Utopia Planitia. Mm-hmm. Well, no, actually, Laris says it. Or not Laris. Yeah, Laris. No, the other one.
The husband.
One of the Rosvin. Yeah, the Romulans.
Yeah.
He says it. He says, you know, Worf, Riker, LaForge. So clearly he's still alive in Picard.
We were worried he died last episode. We now know he's alive.
But that means that he wasn't there.
It means he was working the whip from
my
afar.
Operating theory. Yeah, my operating theory is he was working at Utopia Planitia up until they started putting sense in, but as Data's friend, he probably resigned or moved. Because I would.
In the Countdown comic, he's part of the...
He's the guy building all
the ships. So
he's overseeing
everything. He's there with the robots. That's true. He's a high-ranking officer, so he got first contact day off.
Right. Good job, Geordi.
You're high-ranking.
So yeah, you're right.
He's cracking.
If he was there for all of those ships to depart, yeah, you're right. He would have to have been there. Okay, so my operating theory, as much as I liked my operating theory, I have to admit, I've got to concede that point.
So yeah,
he's in charge.
So like last episode, Dave.
Fake datas.
Yeah, last episode, Dave made the joke of like it would be the opposite of Roots. It would be LeVar Burton being the slave owner of a bunch of androids.
Call it Stuart Roots backwards.
It's space Roots. It's Roots what's space.
Yeah, Struts. How was it?
Stoor.
Yeah, backwards. Stoor. So anyways, as much as I cringed at that, Dave, you called it.
Also, Aaron, not only did you cringe, you laughed pretty hard. So I was proud.
It was funny, but it was just like, I was like, ugh. Anyways, so after that we go to Chateau Picard again.
What?
How many times we got to watch this? The opening exterior scene of Chateau Picard. There's like three or four scenes. Chateau Picard.
It'll probably
like,
happen every episode. Even once they get to space, they'll cut to Chateau Picard where like number one's taking a poo, and then the Romulans cleaning it up, and then it goes back to Picard in space.
So. Yeah, so Lars and Zaban are basically Picard's butlers, right?
Yeah.
So
where's his bat suit? I swear.
So yeah, I know, right?
he's got the Batmobile under the Chateau Picard.
He does.
Yep. That'd be great. It'd be great if he had a suit like that. It's basically this Lacutish suit.
Yeah, it is. Back when he was in the BSDM.
Yeah, so they're going over the security Starfleet data showing when Dodge and Picard were attacked by the Romulan, you know, motorcycle gang, and they see that all this stuff was kind of like
scrubbed
from any kind of information. So
by the Vajosh, the Vajjad.
So that's the next thing is that
Domjot,
Zaban,
Domjot. Yes. No, which Vosh was it? It was Zat Vosh.
Zat Vosh.
Which Vosh? That Vosh.
The sexy Vosh.
Zaban suggests that Tal Shiar may have erased Dodge's presence, and that and Laris says that it could be this faction within the Tal Shiar, or might have been the actual origin, like a secret society within the Tal Shiar that's been there for thousands of years, named the Zat Vosh. And they're
which Vosh?
Zat Vosh.
Okay, thanks.
Zat Vosh.
We had to know which girlfriend of Picard we're getting involved with here.
I know. There's so many. Yeah, good point.
Plow Vosh. That's the Plow Vosh.
Okay. I really can't let that joke go. That's just really a good one.
Yeah.
Pretty proud of that one.
It'd be funny if John Luke was like, Vosh? What? Who?
What? Which Vosh? Zat Vosh.
So
there,
how about the wash with that 10-foot pole sticking out of his chest? Hay,
right,
roll in the hay, roll in the hay. So they explained to Picard that Zat Vosh is like a mythical, scary story you tell like kids at night and stuff like that,
and also the Tal Shiar recruits.
Yes. And that there's this basically, they have this deep fear and loathing of all artificial life forms. And Laris brings up, do you ever notice that Romulans never have any kind of artificial intelligence, androids, cybernetics within Romulan culture?
No, because we've barely gotten a look at Romulan culture in 50 years of television.
Kind of look like the Roman Empire to me, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, but that said, every time we bring it up, there are no robots or anything like that. And if you think about, like, you go back to the Defector, and you know, Admiral Zhirok says to Data, I know a number of people who'd love to get their hands on you. And and Data's like, I don't know whether I should be disturbed by that or not. And he goes, you should be disturbed.
Yeah.
So it does fit to what Aladar Zhirok said.
I think it works out.
I'm sure that that's convenient, yeah. But it does fit, you know.
What about
nicely
dovetails there? What about that tumbling ship in Enterprise?
Well, and that might, well, I mean, that was 300 or 200 years ago, or 150 years ago. Quite a long time ago.
It was a drone ship.
It was run by an Anar.
Yeah,
there wasn't any robot in it. It wasn't artificial at all.
Yeah, but he was kind of jacked.
It was droned.
Right, yeah. But it was remote run by an Anar. So right. the intelligence on it was still Anar.
Kind of cybernetic jacked in, though. He's kind of had, like, he was kind of jacked into their computers.
Only Discovery acknowledges Enterprise. Shh, go away.
Anyways, okay. So they go to Daj's flat, her apartment, where she was attacked.
Hovel.
Hovel.
Her Boston hovel. Up right above the Cheers bar.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Sam Malone's under there. Dead.
And dead, anyway. Buried.
but Norm's...
Skeletons under there.
But Norm's still drinking.
Yes.
Right?
Norm and Morn are best buddies now.
More right next to each other.
Yep. That would be actually hilarious. Norm and Morn sitting next to each other.
At the bottom of the bar underneath Dodge's apartment. Now we have added an entire level to this entire thing. This is our headcanon. This is our headcanon, man.
This is Cheerception.
This is a comic strip in itself right there.
Right.
So they go, Picard goes to Daj's, like, apartment where the attack took place, where her boyfriend was killed in the last episode. And this is where they use something, a technology that the Romulans use to kind of
It's illegal,
like,
in the Federation, because everything invented by Romulans is illegal because they're racist.
Right. So it does this molecular reconstruction device that kind of, like, they can see kind of what happened in the past, sort of. And while they're looking through it, they're going through the whole thing, Laris noticed that some of the past was, like, interrupted. Something was, like, cleaned. She said scrubbed. So it's not readable anymore. So right. Then they decide to go into Daj's personal computer, start looking for things. And she said, they've cleaned this too. There's barely anything. But then they decide they're going to look for how you introduce yourself to your new computer and how the computer recognizes you as a person. And because she has a identical twin, they decide they're going to go through if there is anything in the computer itself to tell where this, the computer confused Daj with her sister Soji. And they do come up with that evidence. And that evidence basically says that she is off world. They don't know where she is off world, but she is not on Earth. So that's where that ended for that.
I don't understand why Picard thought this was such an amazing thing. It's just like, you live in the United Federation of Planets. You've personally been to hundreds of thousands of worlds. Why is this so surprising that this message could have come from anywhere but Earth?
I don't know, but...
he acts like, he did seem a little shocked.
Yeah, he seemed a little shocked.
It was weird. It was very weird. Did he forget about space and planets and stuff?
Space planets? What about it? So then we jump to the Borg cube, and this is where we have my favorite character, Narek, and Soji making love in their underwear.
Dry humping at its finest.
So much.
Yes. And
this got an MA rating. Instead of dropping F-bombs, why couldn't we just have an evolved view on sex and nudity instead of like
this? I just watched the first three episodes of The Witcher, and there's plenty of nudity in that.
Right?
But not this.
What I don't get is I could see nudity being more appropriate for Star Trek than F-bombs.
It is more appropriate for Star Trek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's way more appropriate.
Because we've had that kind of thing before.
I mean, Spock is confused by bad language in the 23rd century. What, did it make a comeback all of a sudden?
Yeah, they're like, let's bring back the fuck word.
Let's bring back that word.
So, yeah, so anyways, so they're on the Borg cube, and apparently Narek's sad story that he wanted to tell Soji in the very end of the first episode got her sad enough that she would sleep with him. So.
Right.
And that's the only personal information he's ever going to tell her ever again.
And I got to tell you guys, if you want to get with a girl that you really got the hots for, tell her a sad story. Tell me how that works out for you. I don't. Right.
Send us an email at yahoo.com.
I don't think that's going to work. I don't think it's going to work.
Let us know how anyways, it works, guy.
Anyways, so.
I've just got to say, in all the years that I have lived on this planet, that's never been the way that I've ever gotten together with a girl.
Let me tell you the most depressing story. Oh my God! Let me sleep with you.
Yeah, you're so sexy suddenly.
So there's this banter between both of them, and basically, Narek is not telling her anything about him because he's Romulan, and apparently they're secretive. But he wants to. He's going to see her down at the
reclamation place.
Yeah, well, they're on the cube, so there must be like a place where they enter into the rest of the. I don't know. I don't totally understand it, but it's a big cube, I'm assuming. So
it's the one that chased Voyager back at the end of Endgame.
Is it? Do we know that for sure?
It's the only one that would make sense, unless it's just another random dead Borg cube.
So this is where they part ways. But so we get basically the idea that he's very secretive. She's maybe a little naive. And they're on the Borg cube together. There we go. Back on Earth, back in Chateau Picard, we get a visit from Picard's doctor, Maurice.
Pulaski. Wait, no.
He's so this is
Pulaski.
This I'm assuming this was his doctor, physician on the Stargazer.
Yes,
because they bring this up and
they bring it up and they talk about the Stargazer.
Yeah, for a minute, and
the navel gazer.
He wants to. Picard wants to be cleared to go out in space for a medical checkup, and he basically says, "Your medical scans show that something showed up, and it's something with his health. With has to do with a his perineal lobe of his brain."
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, which this matches
Bendai syndrome.
Aromatic syndrome that we saw. Bendai syndrome was Sarek. This matches the
in all good things, right?
In all good things. That's where I was after. I'm sorry. I got all like sidetracked there. I was like, I'm in a loop.
Right.
I was going.
So, he basically just says, you're going to die of this. It's like, it might be a long time. It might be a short time, but you know, the prognosis is.
Picard's already pretty old. It's not like, I mean, like old age or. Aromatic syndrome. It can be a toss-up.
Yeah, right.
Of course, they'll probably go out in a blaze of glory, and this is something I talked about a long time ago.
Yep.
Saying that Picard might even die in the first season before the show's over because it might be that dumb.
I hope not. I hope they get at least into the second season.
I hope so. I mean, I hope he makes it to the end, and then he dies at the very, very end. I mean, that would be fine, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, they've changed the dynamics quite a bit for second season. So, I mean, now they're bringing in Whoopi Goldberg in the second season. So I can't imagine him dying.
Maybe, yeah.
Let's hope not. Yeah. Not that fast.
Q's rumored to show up too, and Q won't let Picard die.
You're dead, Picard. So
he will torment him.
Yeah, exactly. So, but he asks him to clear him medically so he could go to space travel. And they even ask him, do you really want to go back into the, you know, into the cold, dark?
He sounds like McCoy from the Star Trek reboots.
Yeah, I know. I think Doctors
which
have
wasn't that far from the McCoy in the original series.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Doctors have a sobering view of what space can do to people.
Yeah, I think they do too.
They're like,
they spend way too much time working on like, on people.
It's really fucked up out here, guys. We should not be out here.
We should not be right? out here. It's like all the Doctors like spent a year in the Mirror Universe just seeing people getting beamed out into space. It's like, you know, that's not healthy.
So Picard goes to Starfleet headquarters in San Francisco, and when he goes in, he meets with Fleet Admiral Christine Clancy, and they have this pretty blunt conversation where Picard tries to lay out what he's dealing with Dodge being killed by these Romulan secret agents, and that she might have been a part of Data's positronic brain or his matrix where that gave him consciousness, that Bruce Maddox might have used those neurons to create Dodge and Soji, and he wants to have a small ship and to go out and find Maddox and find Soji, and
if that's okay with you, I mean, that's, you know, that's all I want.
Demote me to ensign, I don't care, as long as I can get on a ship.
And the Admiral says pure fucking hubris. Yeah. And
our second F-bomb of Star Trek.
Yeah, and third. So basically, yeah, well,
because the Romulan MILF said fucking cheeky.
I think she said fecking.
Fucking cheeky.
I think she said fecking.
Pretty sure she said fucking.
Well, whatever.
That's what I wanted to hear anyway, but that's what it sounded like.
But so she's pretty upset, and she's basically, they get into the whole drama of what happened with the Romulans. How they were supposed to save the Romulans, and the attack on Mars basically changed all those plans, and how the Romulans, obviously the Romulans weren't working with the Federation that well anyways, even with the rescue mission. So she just basically says, this is not your house anymore. Get out. Go back home. That's what you're good at.
Do what you do best. Go home.
Yeah, exactly.
This scene was particularly disturbing. The fact that she's like, 14 other people in the Federation decided that we're gonna lose 14 members if we helped Romulus. I'm like, what? That makes no sense. Because, I mean, like, it's all about inclusion and stuff like that anyway. Like, the Federation, like, you join the Federation knowing this is the goal of the organization. And the threat to leave for including another race makes no sense.
Come on, the Tellarites and the Andorians and the Vulcans all did that in the beginning of Federation, too.
Right. I mean,
that's not uncommon.
That's just to form the Federation because they didn't want to work with them. But I mean, like, I don't know. The Federation's been established for like 200 years at this point. Like, you think they would have grown up at least a little bit.
Yeah. And you know, the United States is 250 years old, and it's a good thing that Texas and New York all agree on everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's it. I mean, it's definitely there. Well, we can get
thing that's actually like a very real thing. They put Nichelle Nichols on the bridge, and half the states in the South wouldn't air the episodes. The episode with the kiss between Kirk and Nichelle, Kirk and Uhura, they wouldn't air them. The South wouldn't air them, and they threatened to take Star Trek off the air. So it's actually not unheard of. I can see this. I can see this dissension in the ranks.
I mean, not unheard of, but I mean, like, they're supposed to be more evolved than us, and they're de-evolving real fast.
I think that there is a cancer in the Federation right now. I think that's what's going on. I mean, it's I'm seeing this. It's been slowly kind of coming apart here at the seams during this, and I think that's what Picard is sort of trying to show.
Also what season 3 of Discovery is dealing with, because the Federation's like all clearly done. I mean, so it's just kind of like,
I mean, there's only like 12 stars or 5 stars left on like
five
the,
or
on
six.
The flag.
It's not that many. Yeah,
it's like there's not that many. Which, if it's 6, we're back to the core races of the Federation at the very beginning. We're back to the Tellarites, the Vulcans, the Andorians, the humans, and the Alpha Centaurians, and maybe one other. You know, there's just not a lot. We're back at the very beginning.
Right.
So,
well, we can get into that when we just wrap this up, but real quick, we get like, I know it, no, cuz that's a very deep subject we can really get into, but so we go back to Chateau Picard, and
it'll never get old, right?
Just every time I see the scene, I'm like, okay, I get it. They're back there. So, like, Picard's, you know, got to figure out what he's going to do. So he decides he's going to talk to his old shipmate, Raffi. So he puts on his communicator pin and tries to contact her. We don't see what happens with that, but I'm assuming there's some kind of direct channel to Raffi. So we get to meet Raffi in the Countdown issues. But this, we get to meet her the first time in this episode at the very end. So, mm-hmm. And then from there, we go to we go back to the Borg cube, and we get Soji and Narek are together, and they're basically going into the reclamation area or whatever they're doing at the Borg cube. Soji's job seems to be taking old Borg, whatever you want to call them, drones, and they're disassembling them. I don't know if they're still alive or if they're dead. That's the only thing was unclear to me at that point. So,
I mean, it sounds like they're still alive because they're saying run if they chase you. So, I mean, like, assimilation is a risk. There's that right. sign that says it's been 5,800 something days since assimilation. I'm sure assimilation is gonna come back because there's that sign. It's a risk and something bad's gonna happen and it's gotta happen.
Right.
And during this time where she's doing all this, we see that Narek's there in the room watching the whole thing. So
giving her the eyes and the ears.
Yeah. So the ears.
Wish he was giving her the penis, but you know.
Right.
That's the Romulan hello.
It's the Vulcan hello. It's the Romulan hello.
So then, back at Starfleet, we get Admiral Clancy talks to the Starfleet Commodore. I think Commodore O. I think that was her name.
Yeah,
but
Commodore O, who's played by Tamlin Tamita, by the way.
Yeah, so she's
Battlestar Galactica. I know Battlestar Galactica.
Babylon 5. Yes,
and they're, you know, basically she gives gives the Commodore like a kind of rundown of what's happening. The Commodore must be a head of security for Starfleet. And so it basically tells the Picard story, but he says, it's probably nothing, but I thought you would know. And you know, the Commodore was like, there isn't anything like that, but if there is, I'll let you know. So, and then she calls in her Lieutenant Rizzo.
Mm-hmm.
And Rizzo is basically a
Romulan altered to look human.
Yeah, but Narek's she seems sister. to be aware of what's happening. Like she seems to know that Narek and Rizzo are working together with the Soji, and that she knew that this this Tal Shiar faction is working on Earth. So there seems to be like Commodore O seems to know something. I don't know what she knows, but she knows something about it. So it's a little confusing how much she's aware, but it seemed like she knew that Rizzo was orchestrating something on the planet.
Presumably, right. I'm hoping she's a Vulcan Jadvash, because if the, like I was saying earlier, it might have been before the show, but if the Jadvash is really thousands of years old, that would be before the Romulan Vulcan split. So there could be Jadvash within both races.
And we were speculating, right. Guy, that maybe that was one of the reasons why they split up the Romulans and the Vulcans.
That might actually make some sense.
And the Jadvash. There might be a... Well, I mean, I think it was the emotional thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it was Sarek, the one who decided we should not be emotional. I'm pretty sure that was like the final straw, but the Jadvash might have been part of it too.
Possibly. And so from there, we get a quick meeting with Narek in his room or wherever he's staying, and with Rizzo comes and basically saying that you better get information or whatever you're going to do with Soji, you better get it quickly because if you don't,
you squandered your first chance. Right?
Yeah, I'm gonna step in, and it's not, you're not gonna like it. So, and that's where the episode basically ends. Oh wait, before it ends, I'm sorry. And then Picard visits Raffi at her trailer park at
which is at Vasquez Rocks.
Vasquez Rocks. Yeah,
on the site of the Gorn fought Kirk.
And he's basically she comes out with a phaser rifle, so you're like, so they don't like each other anymore because they seem to
Picard.
they seemed to like each other beforehand in the comics. They had a good relationship.
Presumably him quitting Starfleet probably pissed her off for some reason, or he probably left her high and dry or something.
Maybe, but, and then from there, he says, you know, there's Romulan agents operating here on Earth, Tal Shiar agents, and, you know, I need your help, I need a ship, and she sees that he has the wine that she likes, the certain year, and so she decides to let him come up and hang out with her. So apparently, this is where we'll probably pick up in next episode.
Yeah, I figure that's where we're going to start there. Yeah.
It's sort of like what I said last week. It looks like second week is he gets turned down from Federation. Third week he's going to be building a crew.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, that makes sense. I think that they watching the Ready Room, there's obviously they have this set up in three acts of three episodes with some kind of epilogue on the end. So these first three episodes are the first act of this show. So that's the way they've kind of got it rigged. So this makes some sense where we're setting up the middle piece so that he's got a mission to go on. Because this is, of course, you know, like the hero's journey. So he's had his call to the other side, call to action, his call to the other side. And you know, of course, he's done his refusal, which wasn't him refusing. It was Starfleet's refusing. Mm-hmm. So he's now looking for, you know, it's set up a little different, but all the pieces are here. Yeah. I'm seeing that, you know, he's had his discussion with the higher power, so to speak, you know, and that's his doctor that kind of thing. So we've got all the pieces going in for the classic, you know, Joseph Campbell's hero's journey.
Right. Right.
So I'm seeing all the pieces being put in place, and we're still in first act, which will resolve this Thursday for first act, and they'll move into the second act, which is where everything gets more complicated.
Crossing threshold, yeah.
Yeah, you said threshold.
Threshold. Thresholds! No, now we're back to lizards again.
Yep.
Right? So there are a couple of things that I really, really liked about this particular episode. One, referring back to his aromatic syndrome is a great callback and a deep dive. That's pretty, you know, somebody's doing their research, because it's the exact same location in the brain and everything that Dr. Crusher had said in All Good Things. So that's a nice nod and a good deep dive. There's a couple of other things that were really interesting. Referring back to the Stargazer's time was kind of cool in its own way. I'm trying to think of one more thing that was fascinating when they made a deep dive into DS9. I can't remember what it was, but there was a call to something else, which was a call to DS9. And I'm having a hard time pulling that up now, because somebody else had pointed it out on the internet, and I was like, oh, that's right. That's great. You know, so one of the other things, of course, is that the number of how many days it's been since assimilation, that's 16 years, and that puts it effectively at the same time as the fall of Romulus.
Sure, so right.
Whatever happened to this cube, you know, happened well back there. So, you know, if there's going to be an assimilation, it's going to have to be something else going on there.
Well, it's the fall of Romulus, and that's where Nero presumably got his Borg tech to augment the Narada before he went back in time.
Right, exactly. And that's a far enough back, you know, call that makes sense. Nobody's been doing anything on these with these Borg forever.
Well, no, I mean, they probably have been. It's just that's the last assimilation was on that date. That many days ago.
Right.
I mean, presumably this is the one that came back in Endgame, which would have been years before the Romulan event.
Right, right. And or something. I mean, it's certainly something that's cut out on this side, you know, quite a ways. So there is that. So I'm seeing all kinds of interesting calls. There are a lot of races that I'm seeing callbacks to here. I'm seeing Andorians. I'm seeing, we're seeing Trill.
You saw Tellarite, too.
Yeah, we saw Telluride. They're doing a really good job of making this fit in the fabric really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of sad that First Contact Day is now a disaster day.
Yeah.
You know, it's been this holiday this entire time, and now it's this day of mourning. And it's like, oh, that's so sad.
Right, exactly.
It's kind of, I mean, it's interesting, it's cool, but it's kind of sad. So there is a lot of that. Going to I'm seeing a whole bunch of stuff in this that I'm really, like, fascinated by. The Zatvash, as much as I'm making jokes about the Zatvash, they did do a nice thing about tying that in and dovetailing it well. Now, I agree with David here. It's not like we've seen, entire episodes with the exception of Unification 1 and 2, remotely on Romulan homeworld.
And that was underground. It wasn't even normal Romulus.
Right. We did see a little bit of, like, their Congress or whatever in Nemesis.
But why would they have robots there? I mean, that's, like, the least place you'd probably want to have robots.
Right. So you could, but the thing I'm getting at is, I mean, they just exploited a nice hole. I mean, I'm guessing, if you look at it that way, it was a well done, they didn't have but it's well researched.
Well, but to be fair, even the Federation, besides Data and a couple like Harry Mudd's women and stuff like that, we don't see androids or even a lot of robots.
Yes. Star Trek's generally been an anti-robot series. I mean, Mudd's robots were from Andromeda Galaxy, for people.
Right, yeah.
Right.
And what was the one with Lurch?
Where are they now?
It does make you wonder, doesn't it? So I mean, there are a lot of things that I find fascinating about this. Right. I've managed to read the first and second Countdown comic, but I haven't been able to find the third. It's sold out. I can't get a hold of it. So I don't know how it ends, but now at least I know some of the background going on here, where Jaban and Laris are, they're refugees effectively. Mm-hmm. And they work for Picard because that gives them a job to do. And
Romulans have an entire empire. Why are they refugees? It's not like all of Romulus is just the planet.
Well, I think we've had this discussion on there too. I mean, all of the Klingon Empire fell because of the stupid moon,
Yeah,
but so I mean,
it didn't technically fall.
Lost their key power source, so they decided to make allies since they couldn't make war anymore.
Right.
It made them strategically weak. It didn't destroy the empire.
Yeah, but Guy, wasn't like that the moon blowing up, wasn't that supposed to be like the Chernobyl kind of like callback?
It was supposed to be the fall of the, their entire underpinning of their economy or whatever fell apart. Yeah. But here's the thing about the Hobus supernova is that you can see in the Countdown comic, that's part of the mission of the Verity. The Verity has been going around to all of these planets to evacuate them. So it's not just the Romulan homeworld. It was a number of planets that got wiped out when the Hobus supernova went.
Which
makes some sense.
But it's I've been doing empire.
Research.
It's a very large pocket of space with lots of planets.
But if you took out Earth and everything around Earth, you take out Vulcan and you take out, if there was a supernova right here, it would wipe out us and it would take out Vulcan and it would take out Tellar. So you'd lose three homeworlds.
I'm pretty sure
and Alpha Centauri. So four homeworlds. It would be pretty brutal.
I don't think supernovas have that far reach. I'm pretty sure there's really bad science.
That's what I was just about to say. I'm doing the research for Bellatrix Rising, my newest comic, and in it I've got a map of all of the stars in the Orion Nebula, in the Orion, the constellation of Orion, because it's the main homeworld is Bellatrix. Mm-hmm. And that's the left star, the left shoulder. The other shoulder, it's not Betelgeuse, right? And if you look at, like, what damage, whatever was in the belt was there was a belt star that blew up that took out all of that stuff. That entire nebula is huge and massive, and there's wreckage of other stars that were there. So whatever happened there, you know, millions of years ago, wiped out an entire zone in there. So well, this isn't that.
Yeah, it's not just that, but also like, what is it? Gamma rays. If they get sheared off of a sun when they explode, it could just wipe out a whole planet, just destroy everything on a planet.
For life.
Yeah. Just burn them alive.
This isn't unheard of. In fact, this is a concern because we are at the edge of Betelgeuse's potential death zone.
Really? Yeah, but that's, I didn't realize it was that big for a star. I thought the star, there's so much space between stars that it would
dissipate. Betelgeuse is 250 light years away, right? So if Betelgeuse died 250 years ago,
we'll find out very soon,
right? But there's a whole bunch of potential nastiness. But on the way from Betelgeuse, it's going to pass by Bellatrix and wipe that star out. And it, you know what I mean? I'm looking at this from a top-down map, which I had made for the comic. I've got a great number of stars that would be in the way of Betelgeuse if Betelgeuse decided to go boop and die. You know, so it's a much more devastating thing. Supernovas are pretty ugly. We had a supernova go bang, like I think it was 150 years ago in another galaxy, and we picked it up. You know what I mean? So
I mean, we could detect the light difference. I just didn't think it would be that devastating of a shockwave.
Right. So it's plausible. I mean, I'm sure that there's, if it's a supernova as opposed to a nova, there's a lot of potential nasty that can go on there. Mm-hmm. So that's entirely plausible. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk about some other potential nasty stuff.
Yeah, let's get on this one.
I'd like to talk about the idea of, first of all, the way the synths are treated in the beginning of this episode.
That is pretty nasty.
So, like Dave was saying before we started the show, like we've seen this in Measure of a Man, and we kind of thought that was put to bed, that they are their own sentient race. And obviously with Data's daughter, Lal,
it was revisited, and then they kind of proved it again, even though she died in the process, but still.
Right. They had to go back through it. Well, and Melinda Snodgrass, who's the one who wrote Measure of a Man, tweeted that clearly nobody has learned their lesson at Starfleet.
Right, exactly.
Like they just don't learn this lesson. They're not getting it.
What was the decision? Like, what was the point of them making this judicial decision if they weren't going to follow it?
Well, and that's the thing. It's like maybe it's like anything. It's like it's just too damn cheap, you know, that we can make these synth people. And maybe they're not as intelligent as Data, or maybe they're not as advanced, but if they're somewhat sentient, you know, you're still working with a race of people. You know, it'd be like us taking, you know, some subspecies of ape that before evolved to humans, you know, and then like making them our slaves, you know. So I don't know. It'd be pretty awful, and there's actually been a lot of talk even within like AI and with robots coming to be in our own world. Like how we treat them, you know, could very well determine our relationship with them in the coming, you know, couple hundred years. You know,
so she already wants to kill us. We haven't made her be a slave yet.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, I noticed that is becoming a recurring problem. Now, I don't find that to be unbelievable, and that's because I mean, we had the same problem with America. I don't find that to be a particularly unbelievable thing either. You know, if you think about when we talk about slavery and breaking free of the slaves, and then there was an evolution to our racism, and then it changed again, and then we had to go through civil rights. And even then, we're still struggling with bits and pieces of that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we're clearly 150, almost 200 years past the initial, hey, it's illegal to treat black people bad. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we're
still
suffering from problems of this. Right. So it's not unbelievable that from the duration of Measure of a Man to now, we still don't have a clear definition of whether androids should be people or not. Because I agree. That's what the whole thing was for. In Starfleet,
but right? While I agree with your point, Guy, it is like, but aren't we at the point where mankind has gone past all this bullshit? You know, that we see other sentient.
Here's the problem I've got. Star Trek likes to turn a mirror on culture.
Oh, absolutely.
And the question we have asked, and I think we as Trekkies need to keep asking this question over and over, is when do we consider them turning a mirror on our culture to be offensive or not? You know, when does canon breaking into canon to try to turn the mirror on our culture, if they break up canon, does that become offensive, or right. are they still following the original mission statement of turning a mirror on it? They're not talking about black people. They're talking about androids, which is again that same.
Yeah, it's a convenient way to convey that story.
It's a vehicle to talk about that same story.
Right, but right. The thing is, they always turn the mirror on it, but they did it without corrupting the mission of Gene and the mission of Starfleet. Now they're corrupting the foundations of what Star Trek is by turning this mirror, and I don't know if that's the right way to do it.
But let's even go
about Intruder.
Yeah.
It's not like we haven't stuck stuff right in the face of things. Yeah, and we've had corrupt admirals, we've had corrupt commodores, even in the original series. So, I mean, I do understand that we shouldn't have. I don't know. I feel like sometimes people take the essence of Starfleet,
the metaphor,
as like an ivory tower.
Yeah.
And you can't use Starfleet as anything. We have to only use Alien 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. Well, the problem we had was after certain number of series, people were starting to mock Star Trek for Alien of the Week. Yeah. You know, I want to do my metaphor, so here's the Zenerg Blackleans who are mistreating their men. Yes, men. That's it. Not women, men. So that we can talk about gender relations.
Well,
so,
you know, but let's get even uglier. That, you know, the idea of the Romulans as a refugee species now were treated and ignored by the Starfleet and the Federation because of all sorts of political reasons. But, I mean, we can just look at the Syrian refugee crisis that we saw a couple of years ago where, you know, that terrible picture of, like, the toddler washed up on the beach shore that, you know, died trying to cross into, I think it was in Italy or Greece. Second, you know, we have at our own borders these people from Central America trying to come up, and they're just trying to get away from terrible gang violence in Honduras and all sorts of other countries like that. And they're just they're being ostracized as criminals. And are there criminals within there? Possibly, but. A lot of them are, you know, just families just trying to find a better life. And yes, maybe they're trying to get to U.S. in a way that's not legal. But it's like the whole thing is like, if your family's starving, would you steal a loaf of bread? You know, is that bad?
Same, right. I see the same thing happening with our own people. The United States is an ivory tower that you cannot argue with. Yeah. There's a group of people that if you say, hey, I don't like what is happening with this law, the immediate response is, are you even a patriot? Why are you living in America?
Right.
And that's the same thing I see when we talk about whether we should take Starfleet and de-ivory tower it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the dirt inside the ivory tower.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I get that same feeling of, well, now, wait a minute. We should be able to look at Starfleet and, you know, pull the nasty skeletons out of the closet and do something about that. Cause we should be able to do that with our own country too. You're not being unpatriotic. You're not being not a Trekkie by, you know, saying, oh gosh, there's skeletons in the closet of the ivory tower of Starfleet. You're examining the realities of it. Are they perfect? Well, there's a lot of things that they're moving forward with a utopian society. And I get that. And I do understand that one of the pluses of Star Trek has always been that we can look that in 300 years we're all going to be spacefaring and not fighting with each other and stuff like that. But the truth of the matter is, Gene Roddenberry didn't want Kirk and Spock to fight with each other. You know, didn't want Kirk and McCoy to fight with each other, and had to be brought back from that edge. Mm-hmm. And then he made it so that nobody would fight each other on Next Gen, and had to be brought back from that edge.
Right.
The truth is that, you can have an utopian society, but it's not interesting. As storytelling vehicle, it's not interesting.
Right.
You have to fall so that the character can get back up as a storytelling vehicle.
I get that.
The thing that just scares me about that is that it's falling. Discovery's in the future. The Federation is all but extinct, and Michael Burnham's going to fix it by her lonesome, because Michael Burnham fixes everything by her lonesome.
Yeah, I know. It's the whole Mary Sue thing.
It's just like,
not like Captain Kirk didn't fix everything all by his lonesome.
No, but he didn't. He had Kirk and he had Spock and McCoy, and they it was a team. And like everyone else in Discovery is like an afterthought. Compared to Michael Burnham, and
I don't know if I necessarily agree. I mean,
she gets far more screen time than anybody else. Even Tilly, which everyone loves, doesn't seem to get as enough screen time
after,
as she
did. After Colbert came back, Tilly disappeared because her role was fulfilled. And even though they brought Colbert back, it didn't do anything for the plot. Like if he would have done something toward the plot, it would have been okay, but he honestly didn't do anything to advance the story.
If we had who is the engineer chick that
Reno?
Yeah, if we had Jet Reno and Tilly on like as main characters, I'd be happy with Discovery.
Yeah, I got to admit, Reno and her, I can fix that analogy with duct tape too.
I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Those two. I love Reno.
Some great lines.
I love Tilly. But Reno was in like 2.5 episodes.
Reno needs to be in way more episodes.
Yeah, she does. Reno is awesome. But I mean, I can kind of see that. But you know, I've had a recent rewatch of a lot of the original series stuff, and though I agree, it's not all Kirk. It's all Kirk and Spock.
Yeah, but let's be serious for a second. Like that's a different era where you had like, you know, Bonanza and like these certain shows that were like very centric of like a hero or two heroes or something like that, and they fixed everything. I mean, that was just the name of the show. But you know, that's how it worked.
Yeah, but that's not how TNG worked. It was the episodes would switch who got the focus. All the time. And, same thing with DS9. Hell, DS9 even forsook its main cast and gave extras that came on that week the episode. And like, that's
how DS9 broke a lot of molds anyway. It isn't the way Star Trek necessarily has been. Now, one of the things that I have noticed that Kurtzman and crew, Michael Chabon and Alex Kurtzman, what they're doing is specifically bringing Discovery into the action adventure role, intentionally harking back to TOS, right? Whereas they're bringing Picard in into the more of the deep thought drama role, which is harkening back to Deep Space Nine and to TNG. So they've got a plan on these two, splitting these two directions. I mean, that's intentional. So, I mean, this is back to the Ready Room on this. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to say that they aren't concentrating a lot more on Burnham than I feel a little comfortable with. But that, I mean, there's a design here. There's a specific design. They're headed to the Captain Kirk Spock thing. They just haven't found their Spock, I guess, even though they literally had Spock.
They literally had Spock, and it was
frustrating. They literally had Spock. People are clamoring for a Pike Spock and number one, and I gotta admit, I would love that.
Yeah,
but you know, it's awesome. Going to be the same thing if they go Section 31. It's going to be all about Michelle Yao.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine because she's been headlined as the star, and that's fine. And Michelle Yao is probably one of the best parts about Discovery after Jet Reno and Tilly.
I don't get how that's different because Shaniqua Martin Green was headlined as Discovery's lead.
I was expecting more an ensemble cast. I know she was.
Yeah, billed, I think they were I, heading I know, a different direction.
I know she was billed as the lead, but I mean that's just annoying because they said the captain's no longer the lead. Well, I'm like, the captain wasn't the lead in Deep Space Nine, in Voyager, in DS9 or TNG, whichever one I didn't say. Enterprise. I mean, like, they were the captain, but I mean, episodes always would rotate who they focused on, and Discovery isn't doing that. And like, just because you're shifting the focus on the character doesn't mean you can't include others and be an ensemble.
And that, and actually looking back in it, Enterprise is pretty close to that too. I mean, they had ensemble episodes.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was the Scott Bakula show.
Well, especially season 3, but I mean, that's also the Zindi War arc, which is probably why people didn't like it as much, because it was the Scott Bakula
show. Exactly. And the, you know, so, I mean, it's not unheard of in our show to have these solitary characters that run everything and are...
But more often than not, it's been an ensemble.
But let's be fair.
And I mean, I'm okay with that. And we're going to back to that, I guess, with Picard. I'm getting the feeling that that's where we're at with Picard.
Yeah, because that's the thing is they're feel Picard, even though it's called Picard, I mean, we're getting more Picard than probably most characters, but we are getting different characters showing up. I don't know how much they'll be developed. Obviously, Picard has a huge backlog of
pieces.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because like the cybernetics doctor, she holds this big piece. Mm-hmm. Of this story. I mean, it's clear Picard's not going to be able to solve the problem, whatever is this riddle. He doesn't know anything other than he was best friends with Data. That's his only drive in this.
But he wasn't. Geordi was Data's best friend.
Well, you know what I mean.
And most everyone else was closer with Data than Picard was.
But there's nothing else that he's got except for this piece.
Yeah.
Everybody else has got better pieces. There's a better cyberneticist. There will be better warriors. There will be better. I mean, you know, they're intentionally setting it up so that Picard cannot solve this by himself.
Oh, and he's going crazy. So there's that.
And there's that. He's got aromatic syndrome. So you're getting what you want out of this. I mean, we are getting an ensemble cast out of Picard, which means that, I mean, I'm seeing that that's what Chabon and Kurtzman were talking about when they were talking about they were going two different directions. They've got the action adventure following one lead thread, one, which is Discovery, and they've got the slower ensemble, which is Picard.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the feeling that that's where they're going, and I get the feeling that Lower Decks is probably also going to be ensemble, and that Section 31 is going to be lead. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just getting the feeling that that's the way they're shuffling out these shows.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, if we get Pike, it'll be ensemble.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, a Pike show would be great as an ensemble show. But Section 31, just the nature of it, it would kind of have to be a lead show. Just because, I mean, for a mystery, you're going to need the main character to be sheltered from stuff and not see all these different points of view. Section 31 right. makes sense as a lead show. Picard makes sense as a lead show, even though it's going to be an ensemble show. Discovery would make more sense as a ensemble show, not a lead show.
So, in other words, they're doing everything shuffling backwards. Up the parts. They're doing it backwards. They're
doing it wrong.
People are doing it backwards. And I have to admit, I'm enjoying Picard a whole lot more out of two episodes than I did out of the Vulcan Hello and Brother,
you know,
which were leads in the first beginning of both seasons of Discovery.
It's true, but it's not a high Discovery. It's true, but it's not a high bar to reach, though. And I don't hate Picard. I've just, like, the first episode was kind of boring, and it was awfully paced. The second episode had no action, which was fine, but it just was like, they didn't really, not much happened. They just kind of elaborated on stuff we already knew, and they could have elaborated it on the first episode. They
said real early on that Picard was going to be a slow start, a slow burn. And, you know, they've been saying that. And that's one of the reasons why when they premiered it, they premiered three episodes. Because the first 3 hours represent that first start.
Yeah.
And I think what they're trying to do is, you know, say that by the third episode, you're going to be fully invested. But they can't guarantee you'll be fully invested by episode 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're saying.
That's rough.
Like, it is.
It's
an ask. It's a big ask that they're asking of the
Trek. Well, and Patrick Stewart, they're hoping will bring everybody to the well.
That's what they're doing. They're using Patrick Stewart to get everyone in, and it's working according to their numbers that they never release. It's got the best numbers, but they never release them, so we don't know.
It's like our president who has the best everything too.
We get the best numbers. We get the best numbers. Picard's got the best numbers.
Best numbers ever.
Yeah. I mean,
we're just saying.
I mean, the show's got a lot of promise, and I'm excited for the promise it could have, but it's not particularly wise, I don't know, with the slow burn, because you can do slow burn and have it be not boring. And that's the thing that kind of got me with the first episode. I was like, eh. I mean, there's promise.
Well, but just, here again, I mean, on the same token, that's what was so wonderful about Deep Space Nine. DS9 is a massive slow burn. It's so slow that most people aren't even getting Deep Space Nine until they were able to stream it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And once they could see it on Netflix as a unit, yeah, as a whole, as a complete piece, then it became everybody's favorite.
Then it clicks. But the thing is, like...
And so, but DS9's a slow burn, too. If you just watch little bits of it,
I know.
Heck, I did. I watched the first season and then gave up. And
I understand.
Had no idea what was going on until my mom called me and said, what's this thing with a Tribble episode? Trial and Tribulations is a fourth season episode.
Yeah.
So I didn't even... I missed every episode, second season and third season, and half of fourth season. I stopped watching. I came back for that one. I was like, damn. You know,
I get that, and that's totally my point. Star Trek has been on the air for over 50 years now. Why do we have to give Star Trek so long to get good? Why can't it just start good?
I felt like it started excellent, personally. I mean, I thought that episode one was beautiful. It was just slow. And I get that it's slow.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's funny because
the slow burn. You gave up on Deep Space Nine because of slow burn. I gave up on it mostly because I couldn't get it, and then I didn't see it all the way through till Netflix, and it was amazing. But I don't know. Like, I feel like
I know, but I mean, you know, we complained that the J.J. Abrams movies were just way too much shooty and blammy and kablammy. And now we're complaining that Picard is too slow. It's like, you know, where are we happy?
Well, I didn't complain that they were too actiony. I just complained that they used dumb science.
Right.
Or badly written story.
Time to lay it out.
Or badly written story. I mean, that's still my complaint. The story isn't, you know, action is fine. No action is fine. You just got to do it right.
I think
right. Well, I'm finding the storing in Picard to be absolutely compelling. Yeah.
I think this is definitely a much better cohesive story than Discovery was, because Discovery jumped all over the place.
Absolutely, absolutely, it is so far. I'm just.
I'll tell you what, though, the writers over at the Star Trek room there for CBS, they definitely have a hard on for artificial intelligence, because they didn't like it in Discovery and they really don't like them now. So.
Oh yeah, they're really anti-that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, they're certainly heading for something with artificial intelligence.
Yeah,
I think that it was nice that they hit Bruce Maddox and they came back in and literally linked this hand in hand with Measure of a Man. That was a really good thing. And now they're bringing up Lull and, you know, connecting up with that episode and talking about everything like that. They're doing a really good job.
They're doing a great job with callbacks.
Yeah, they're threading it in real nice and tying it in really well to make it feel like home.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's feeling like where we should be. This is an extension, a natural extension of TNG. And I like the fact that they're not taking it in the obvious direction. They're taking it in a, well, maybe the Federation's starting to be eaten from the inside out. That's not the first time that's happened. We can talk about Homefront right now. And absolutely talk about the fact that DS9 explored the Federation.
I want conspiracy.
How about conspiracy one and two?
I want the conspiracy bugs to come back.
Well, the conspiracy bugs, I don't consider that to be necessarily.
But they did eat their way from the inside.
They literally ate their way.
Right. I think we've got like both of these going on here. I think if we think about who Commodore O is, she's probably Romulan. A Romulan double agent.
No, but I want her to be Vulcan, so that Jad Vash would have started on Vulcan. That if they're smart,
That theory. That's a great theory. I'm even more on board with your theory.
If they're smart, she's Vulcan and Jad Vash, and not Romulan.
Right, which would make sense because we saw that with Spock all the time.
Yep.
Connecting back and forth. So you got that kind of thing going on here. But I mean, I look at a lot of these pieces and, you know, you've got like the conspiracy side from Conspiracy 1 and 2, which is like Commodore O. And then you've got Homefront, which is that the wonderful two-parter in DS9, which has the amazing lines about how you can't just expect people to give up their blood to be tested to see if they're a changeling or not.
Yeah,
you've right. got that paranoia that they were putting in Homefront. Both of those things are called in here. I mean, I'm still seeing that you know, given just the littlest push, the Federation immediately closes its doors and locks things down. Wow. I mean, they banned androids just like they banned augments. I mean, it's like they're quick to move to just shut the borders.
Right.
And I see that. I've seen it's totally within the line of Starfleet. It's totally in line of the Federation. So
it reflects American society too. I mean, after 9/11,
now we're doing the same thing.
We saw that pretty strongly, and obviously, what is it? The war, the Zindi War, was a total like
9/11.
It was
an analogy.
Star Trek in the Darkness was also 9/11.
Right. Yeah. Let's keep bringing that one back over and over and over. I mean, because there's another one I don't talk about, Threshold and Into Darkness. We just don't discuss those.
We don't talk about these.
We don't discuss this. Mm-hmm. No, that's another thing that, you know, the more I think about this, the more in depth I feel like this fits. We had that with the Zindi War. We had that with the changelings. We had that even with the conspiracy bugs. You know, we've had over and over and over, and you have to remember the conspiracy was also a Gene Roddenberry thing.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we've had this over and over and over. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you wanted to talk to kind of address what David's saying, and I do think that he's got a point, Gene Roddenberry made sure the conspiracy was not Federation members. These were all corrupted people. These were all zombies, effectively, that took over.
Yes.
Right, right.
So they weren't actual, like, you and me's doing this. This was high-ranking admirals being taken over by bugs, you know,
right.
and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So there is that. And then, you know, and so that's different than Homefront, where it was, in fact, the Federation all doing this. Mm-hmm. But then you look back at Star Trek VI, and Star Trek VI had Commodore West, or Colonel West. West was played by René Bergeron, and who was doing the exact same thing.
Right.
Right. Here's how we can here. And he wasn't an alien or anything like that, even though he put a mask on.
That's all you need. That's all you need, guy.
Is the mask. That's how this works. I mean, you know, and that Star Trek VI was
the maps and the compasses.
Right, the maps and the compasses. It's just the thing. Anyway, and we had that same thing where they were doing the paranoia about the Klingons.
Yeah,
sure. You know,
they were playing that same game there of the Klingons can't be trusted. We'll find a way to pin this on the Klingons so that the Klingons will think that we should, you know, and then the Khitomer Accords were all put there. And we had that all happening at Khitomer.
Right.
Well, you know, so it's in the thread to have these dissension in the ranks sort of things. It's natural for what's going on in Starfleet.
It is, but we just know it's going to completely crumble because of Discovery Season 3, and that's just the sad part.
Well,
it doesn't rebound, it doesn't get better.
We don't know anything other than what we've seen in the previews for Discovery Season
6
3.
Six stars in the flags is pretty conclusive that it's crumbled.
It could be an alternate universe, but is it 900 years in the future? Yeah, 900 years in the future. Who knows what they're facing in the future? You know, I mean, it could be something
that's
worse 900 than
900 years for the Federation to fall. It didn't fall in 2401.
And it could be something worse than the Borg that they're facing. Who knows?
Right.
Maybe it a giant plague. Maybe a plague wiped through all the planets and killed, you know, millions and millions and billions of people.
Maybe it was another supernova, David.
Maybe the Synths took over the Federation and everyone got the fuck out.
Right?
They joined the Romulans.
The United Synth Federation.
Yeah.
The Federation of Synths.
Yeah, maybe, because it looks like all the alien races are banding together fighting the Federation. So maybe the Federations are all synthetic and that's why the Federation's evil. And then Michael Burnham will talk the Synths to death like Kirk used to.
Hey, you know, that would at least make me happy.
Kirk logic.
Yeah. Out-logic them.
Actually, I wouldn't mind seeing a Michael Burnham, a Kirk logic the robots to death.
That would be kind of funny.
I admit, that would be cute.
The series finale, Star Trek Discovery. I mean, the
does
season
not
finale
compute,
season 3.
Does not compute.
Michael Burnham talks a computer to death, Alan Kirk.
That'd be great. Yeah, when out of curiosity, when was the relativity and the time, was that 900 years in the future?
It was something like that. Though that's my issue with Star Trek Discovery at all. Like if Discovery was that big a problem for them to be missing for those 6-7 months in the Klingon War, why didn't the relativity just go like scoop them up and put them back where they're supposed to be? I mean, easy peasy.
Right, but I'm just saying. Don't we have people 900 years in the future? I don't know.
I think so. I don't know the. I mean, maybe Discovery went to an alternate timeline. I hope that's the case, because, I mean, yeah, because we do have a far future Trek. I mean, even, what's his face? The guy, the temporal Cold War guy who always kept coming back to Archer. That's like...
Yeah, that's pretty far. That's
Enterprise J.
Enterprise J, I hate that ugly ship.
It's so ugly.
Oh, yeah, it's a brutal ship.
What was the guy's name?
And Eagle Moss made one.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah. So I've seen the Eagle Moss Enterprise J, and I'm like, well...
I won't be buying that.
No, I collect ships, and I don't even want to collect that one.
And there's like a ton of them on their shelves. Like, why didn't anybody want Enterprise J?
Right.
Because it's gross.
Yeah, it's really not pretty. I mean, not to knock you, John Eves, because you know I love you, man. You know I love you, but, dude.
Enterprise J is from the 26th century.
Yeah. Hmm.
So that's 200 something years after Picard. So unless that timeline got wiped out and they don't future that, let's see. Yeah, I'm looking up USS Relativity right now.
That's the hard part about time travel. It's like, you know, what time stream are we going to be in?
The Relativity is from the 29th century.
Okay.
So that's 500 years in the future from Picard.
So we've still got another 400 years after that.
Yeah.
So they place this well and clear of any position. So that worked. That's okay. I'm okay with that. But man, you want to talk about driving around a Model T. You know, the Discovery is just going to be sitting there hanging out like a Model T.
Well, yeah. Discovery's been the most powerful ship in the world because everyone's fought each other. It's Mad Max in space. Everything's broken down.
Mad Max in space. I don't know what's going on.
Sure, it's a Model T, but it's a Model T that's pristine versus versus all the other stuff.
Everything else is on fire. Yeah. They're going to have to bring back the episode, the short track. There's a reference to the short track somewhere along the line. Everybody abandons Discovery.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. We don't know what that is either.
I mean, presumably they abandon it in the future because it's worthless in the future.
Right? And they put it on a mission.
Yeah.
Boot. It becomes sentient on its own. Yeah.
You will make love to a black man who comes aboard the ship. That's your mission. Wait for him.
He will come. Here's your new mission.
And you will build it,
one
will come.
Remaining shuttle pod for it. Yeah. That's all you've got is the one remaining shuttle pod.
And remember, right. Play him Fast. Betty Boop because he gets a hard on for Betty Boop.
Boop, right. Boop, beep, boop. I don't know, guys. Predictions for the next couple episodes. Obviously, we know that he gets a crew together, so we know that, but. Something more far out. What's your feeling about Soji and Dodge? Like, are they just part of Data, or there's something else? I have a sneaking suspicion that they're part of Data and the Borg Queen.
That's an interesting twist. That might be
a hybrid.
I don't think so, because I think Maddox wouldn't have gotten involved in Borg tech. I think that this is Maddox improved upon. Yeah, I think Maddox improved upon Data. I think wherever Maddox is being crazy, he's improved upon Data.
I hope Maddox shows up.
Yeah, that'd be great. He's still active. He's still out there somewhere.
Is he?
The guy that played Maddox. Yeah, he's still out there. So, I mean, they could call him back in. One of the things that I think is going to happen is I think we're going to have some kind of resurgence of Borg or something, and Hugh and Seven of Nine are going to get involved in that. And I think that's where Seven comes into this story. That's my prediction on this one.
From what they've announced, Seven of Nine hates Picard because she blames him for the way the Federation's gone, which makes no sense. And apparently, when they meet in the show, it'll be the first time they've ever met. And I'm like, really? They should have formed Borg, previously Borg Anonymous.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what's going to happen is they're going to, I think Seven's going to tell them that that's where Soji is. Because I'll bet you that Hugh and Seven are connected in some way. And so Seven's going to be the one that's going to say, you know, here's where Soji is on this Borg ship. You know, so that's where that connection's going to be. But I also think that somehow going to the Borg ship is going to either activate the Borg or do something with the Borg drones that are on the ship.
Yeah, Picard going to the ship will probably activate the Borg drones. Because he's Locutus, the Borg will probably start going nuts. Lots of people get assimilated. The Borg ship will probably become active, and then they'll have to bring a Romulan ship out of mothballs to fight it.
That's where we get our Romulan ship, yeah. The bird, that old war bird.
TOS versus Borg.
Right.
Well, I'm hoping.
But I also feel like, I mean, I'm looking forward to, by the way, just as a side note, my inner geek is so looking forward to seeing that word war bird. I'm just saying. Yeah, I just want to see that old warbird. That'd be so great.
Also, with Picard in space, I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be a Federation. He's going to run in with a Federation and have to fight a Federation ship. Yeah. I foresee this going very Renegades. Because just everything, all the rumors leading up to Picard, with like the type of characters they're going to be, and that, you know, he's obviously not going to be on a Federation ship. It smells very much of Renegades, and they kind of had run-ins with the Federation ship on Renegades. And I mean, for more drama, and since they didn't want Picard to go in space, and what's her face? I mean, it'll be a little bit more in depth than Renegades was, because Renegades wasn't very good. But because
it's a hot mess,
that lieutenant, because that lieutenant ex Romulan, she'll probably get her commander to go after Picard. Whatever ship she's on. So there will probably be some kind of Federation ship involved with trying to take Picard down along with the Borg once they get active. So it's going to be a hot mess. But I think everything's going to lead back to Maddox, and Maddox is going to be the real big bad of the series, even though he made a Data clone.
Really? You think he's going to be the big bad?
I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wild speculation.
Wild speculation.
So another speculation I have, by the way, is Lieutenant whatever her name was.
Lieutenant Dan.
Dan.
I ain't got no legs.
Right. No, Lieutenant whatever her name is, the Romulan. Rizzo?
Yeah.
Rizzo.
Yeah.
I'll bet you anything.
Lieutenant Rounders.
I'll bet you anything she was the brother.
She was
that the he's brother. That Narek is talking about. I lost my brother.
Oh, really? She transitioned?
Oh, yes. Sex change, I guess. And the human change. Oh, that'd be interesting.
Huh. I mean, like I said, that's my prediction. I'm predicting that she's the brother.
Wow. Interesting.
So there's my David Duncan prediction right there. Right.
I've heard,
like, see if that one comes true.
I've heard rumors that the girl from Daystrom, she's going to be revealed to have been previously a man.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
That's a rumor I've heard somewhere.
That's
which,
weird.
You know, that would make some sense if Rizzo is actually transitioned from over. From
that way, there'll be a double switch. Because
no, well, I mean, maybe you got your wires crossed. You know what I mean? Because I'm basing this on Narek saying I had a brother. You know.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So there's my prediction, but we lost him.
Some people can have more than two kids, guy.
Yeah, but that's not the way television works.
Yeah.
There's a Chekhov's gun, and it has to go off somewhere along the line.
Not really.
We got the Chekhov's gun. The biggest Chekhov's gun we got was it's been 5,000 days since an assimilation.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely
that one's a major Chekhov's gun just waiting.
Waiting to go off. That's going to go off real bad.
Or saw off the barrel of Rizzo's gun.
We're just saying.
Rizzo just creamed her pants.
Oh, no. Tapioca pudding.
Tapioca again.
Oh, no. God.
Although they won't hear the first time until after the credits. Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
That's how audio editing works, guys.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so anyways, that's all some interesting conjecture for sure. I mean, obviously we have nothing to substantiate that. It's just wild speculation.
Just one quick thing before we wrap up. What did you guys think of the Pike-era Disco Enterprise showing up right before the Enterprise-D? Like, why didn't they show all the other Enterprises?
They didn't have 3D models.
I honestly didn't care.
And why the oldest iteration of the Enterprise and then the D? I don't know. It was just
weird. The D, which wasn't the newest iteration.
It wasn't.
Right?
It's three behind, or two behind, because the Enterprise E and then the Enterprise F is available.
I think it's just fan service. First, the other one is they obviously have, like, renders of that one, and the other one was they're like, remember that old Enterprise, guys? Here it is again. So
I think it's a slap in the face to people who hate Discovery and want to watch Picard and say, hey, look, this is canon.
I don't know if that was it. I think they probably just had the models. I mean, they had to make the D just for that first scene
in the first
episode.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
So they had the D, and then they had the Enterprise from Discovery already in machine.
Right.
Having it modeled is probably the first reason. The second reason is probably to make the anti-Discovery people.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think their main mission is to troll people.
I don't know.
I mean, get better things to do with their life.
I mean, you can accomplish two things with one stone. You have the model.
Yeah, I think people that get all worked up about that needs to settle down a bit.
I watch so many videos about people talking about Disco and Picard. It's like it's crazy. I mean, I have my gripes, but I mean, I want to enjoy them, and there's some episodes I really do enjoy, but some people just hate it all, like because they want to hate it all, and I'm like.
Yeah, they hate everything past, say, 2009.
Yeah.
You know, anything past 2009 is just evil and horrible. And every time they come up with explanations of why, it's the same things. It's bad writing. It's bad directing. It's bad, character design. All these things. And it's so funny because I still have those 1987.
Oh, I read some of those you posted. Those things were brutal.
And it's the same things, you know, Star Trek, The Next Generation with that bald captain and the Riker guy who's really a Kirk wannabe. And the acting is horrible and the directing is horrible. And, you know, it's all the same things.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be so bad, except I remember hating the Hilton Prize. That's what we called it. You know, the Enterprise D was the Hilton Prize because it was like so, you know, like a modern day hotel.
Right.
And it was. You know, we hated it.
Right.
And I think that's just the nature of Trekkies, is to hate everything that comes out that's new, that isn't just episode, you know,
100. The Undiscovered Country.
We all hated the Undiscovered Country, too, when it came out. It's like, we hated Star Trek 1 because they changed the Klingons. And that was, and then they changed the D7 and made it all crinkly and had all this junk extra added stuff that was on it. Well, now you look at the Katinga class and you're like, oh, that's so pretty and classy. And you realize you're just an idiot. You know?
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I'm intentionally trying to keep my mind open on both Discovery and Picard. I'm not ecstatic about the first two seasons of Discovery. Certainly, they're not the world's best, but I liked them. You know what I mean?
Granted.
And I'm remembering that I didn't like the first two seasons of TNG and DS9.
I mean, it's the same. It's the same. I mean, I agree. They're rough starting out, and they're not the best, but I mean, like, they're solid enough, and they're even as rocky as the first two seasons of Discovery are, they are still technically probably the best first two seasons of Star Trek since TOS for starting off.
And that's the way I feel.
As rocky.
And they're rough.
Yeah, they are rough. And as rocky as they are, they're still technically the best because they just have a little bit more cohesion. They're just not as cohesive as they should be for 2019-2020 television. And hopefully with season 3, it'll be even tighter and even better. But Discovery's also had all the writers of drama. Picard has too.
Right. Well,
but it's been between seasons. Because Shaban's gone, but I think he finished Discovery, and then he's on to some. I mean, Picard season 1, and now he's on to something different. And hopefully, at least all of season 2 will have the same showrunner, and they don't switch midway.
Yeah.
Well, the showrunner on Picard is Patrick Stewart. I mean, he's the one who clears everything. So we should have some real nice cohesion.
Well, it was
between it was in season one and season two.
No, the showrunner was Michael Chabon.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that even though you're saying the showrunner is Michael Chabon, and he was, he's the guy in charge, so to speak. He deferred to Sir Patrick.
Yeah.
And if you look at his interviews, the reason he's the showrunner is because Kurtzman gave Sir Patrick a rundown of what he thought would be good, and Sir Patrick said, "Nah, never mind." And then Chabon said, "Okay, well, what I'm going to do is I've got this idea and this concept. Let me just write it up real quick. And you know what's the worst he'll say? No. I mean, he'll just say no. It's okay." And he gave it to Patrick Stewart, and Patrick's like, "No, this we can do this."
Yeah.
And
but
so,
I mean, it depends on who the showrunner is next season and if they defer to Patrick in the same way Chabon did. I mean, it's all up in the air at this point, I think.
What I think is funny is in the Ready Room, Chabon talks about this to Will Wheaton. And Chabon says, you know, "I gave him this entire thing. And of course, it's all gone now. We've completely changed it. All every last bit of it's changed." But he's like, "But that original idea was what got Sir Patrick on board
yeah.
Which is the reason why I think Chabon's in charge. But yeah, they're clearing everything with Sir Patrick. He's not letting anything go that doesn't fit his optics on this.
Yeah.
So
we'll have to see how things shake up in the room for season two. I haven't heard any specific news on who's taking over.
Yeah, I know. I haven't either.
Cool.
That's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Everything's interesting here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're laying down some pretty cool stuff, and I think there's going to be a lot of really, as I said last episode, I think there's going to be some earth-shattering change-up in the Star Trek universe because of this series. So
yeah, for sure. I'm interested to see where this goes. And like I said, I'm not super sold on the series right now, as it stands, these two episodes, but it is compelling that there's definitely going to be some interesting stuff happening. So I'm hooked as far as that goes, but Yeah,
I'm sold on it.
I'm hoping it picks up. I'm just hoping it picks up a little bit.
Right. Makes sense.
Well, guys, let's wrap this episode up.
Yes, sir.
And let's Guy, why don't you give the audience a little contact information for everything that you are always working on?
Okay, you can find me at anything at GS Davis Art. I brought me on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. And I even have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/GS Davis Art. I'm working on a new comic called Bellatrix Rising, which I will be moving my Tamerlan characters over to so that I can run my own IP. And in doing so, I've been having a lot of fun doing world building. So, I'm bringing patrons up on my world building. If you become a patron, I do little videos every Friday now with another artist, and we check in and make sure we're progressing down
the
road and not stalling out. Yeah, it's an accountability. It's actually what it is. It's an artist accountability video. Nice. And patrons can watch me world build. So you can do that at my Patreon channel, or I've got short little accountability videos that I put on my GS Davis Art cool. page as well. Nice. So that's where you can find me.
Awesome. And also you do Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Yep.
Which is your podcast, and you stream live on Facebook. Sometimes I get to join you.
Yeah, and you get to join us there. And then, of course, that's just at RockyMountainGeekTank.com, and you can find us anywhere at Rocky Mountain Geek Tank too.
Very nice. So, very cool. And for us, obviously, you can find us at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. On top of that, you can go to our Facebook group page. Please join the group there, Facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics. There's, as we were saying before, some heated debates about Picard and many other things. So it's always an interesting conversation. And you can tweet us at Synthaholic Duo, and you can find us there. And if you feel the show is something you want to support, as I said before, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/Synthaholics, and you can throw some money our way. And lastly, the best way just to share is to share the show to with your friends, family, on social media. Just that's a great way to support the show and help us. So, anything else, guys, before we say goodbye?
No, I'm looking forward to the next episode. Yeah.
Oh, the Romulan goodbye.
The Romulan goodbye.
Let's see some space.
All right. So, as always, live long and prosper, one and all.
Shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Cool.
It's a podcast.
Boogie woogie woogie.
Done.
Thanks for coming on, guy.
Yeah, man.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate this. I enjoy coming in here. I always feel like I come in here and then just argue with everybody, but then you keep calling me back. So I guess I'm not arguing too much.
That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
So, we have differing things, and then like people can hear that we have differing opinions, and then we don't yell at each other and hate each other. That's
how they know
very much the point. I mean, like, but that's the thing is people get so heated on Facebook and these arguings, and they just get mad at each other. I'm like, look. Me and Guy can disagree all day long, and we still love each other.
Yeah, exactly.
We love you long time.
We love you long time.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, I really enjoy it. And I actually really do enjoy arguing with you because you're a reasonable arguer, unlike some of the other people I've been arguing with. I get into these fights with these people, and I'm like, do you guys even... And they're like, what do you know? I'm like, well, let's just start rattling it out here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I've been bathing
in Star Trek for years.
Right. I've got stuff.
Do you know how many Cheerios I ate to get all the TNG exactly. stickers? I ate all the Cheerios.
I fought for this Trekkiness, man.
My taste buds will never stop tasting Cheerios because of Star Trek.
Right. Exactly.
So bad.
So,
yeah, oh, I'm glad we enshrined that story. I just got to say, I'm so glad we enshrined that
story. It's like one of those things I'll never forget, the Cheerio story.
And it's such a weird story. And now I kind of want to figure out if I can ever find those stickers, you know, just like on eBay. Yes.
Totally. Can't I'm get like, them yeah, I know.
No, Guy. You have to buy boxes of cereal that were kept, and then you have to eat them. Again.
Right? Oh, it's not worth it if I don't go through the suffering.
Not again. Yeah, flashbacks. Look, oh my God.
I still don't like normal Cheerios.
Just give me the Honey Nut, please.
I'll eat Honey Nut, but I can't eat the regular Cheerios.
Yeah, I know.
So much suffering. That's great. Oh, man. I don't try to argue for argument's sake. I try to argue from my headcanon and what I know about Star Trek factually.
Yeah.
I don't just argue because I hate it. I'm just like, huh, well, what about this? What about this? Yeah. What about this? And you usually have pretty good answers.
Yeah, I'll get in there with you on this. I'll get in this ring.
Okay, Kenny.
Yeah, we actually might be able to do a show.
What happened, buddy?
Well, I don't know. I think there's something wrong with my modem. I actually am calling you on my phone. I just installed Skype on my phone, and now I'm just going to talk to you on my phone.
You know, my modem was given a hard time. I finally, like, for Christmas, I got the whole family a whole new Wi-Fi modem thing. It, like, changed everything.
My last.
Well, that's what we've got. That's why I'm aggravated, is because that's exactly what I've got, is a Wi-Fi modem that I purchased myself because I got tired of Comcast's random modemness. But that's okay. I mean, you know, I don't know what's going on. It's been the last day or so. I'll come home and my computer will say it's not connected to the internet. Yeah, exactly. I knew that I was going to be required to contact the East Coast, you know, where you guys are 2 hours ahead of me. And so that's exactly what was going on.
Right? I know. Because it did this last time. We did a Skype call. It hates us.
It just hates Buffalo. That's what it is. It's you guys. Yes. How's your weather out there?
It's not bad.
Snowy.
It's a little bit snowy, but it's not like... It's mostly slush at this point.
Yeah, we've
done pretty good, Guy.
Well, that's actually good since I'm, you know, on a phone.
Yeah, sounds... I mean, it's a slight dip in quality than your from your normal setup, but it sounds fine to me. How's it sound to you?
Yeah, I don't have my deep, awesome voice.
The dulcet tones of Guy Davis.
Dulcet tones of Guy Davis.
That'll never go away. It's like it's been a saying for what, 4 years now.
Yeah, I know. We just totally. And I don't know if that was just an affectation of that particular microphone, or
it probably was.
It worked in your favor because a lot of ladies cream their jeans. So,
well, that works.
We just got emails of pictures of inside of jeans. It was interesting. Not the actual people, just the inside of jeans.
Just the inside. We don't know who is it.
We just have jeans. We don't know who they belong to, but
it looked like tapioca inside of underwear, but we didn't know what that meant.
We're not sure what that means exactly, but not a good thing.
I think it was a death threat. I don't know.
Yeah. This is gonna be a good. It's gonna be a good episode.
All right, are you ready for me to start?
We're already, aren't we? Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, let's get started since it's late.